We are what we sell. We are pennies in the whale. But we won't float when the ship goes down.
Welcome to episode 19 of Pennies in the Well. I'm your whacked out, over the top, lost my mind through November, not getting it back in December. Hello, January! Host, Saturn Darkhope. Welcome to a wee bit of insanity as I come back after nearly a month of being off and doing other kinds of stuff. So, welcome. Thank you for downloading the show. I feel almost lost in how to start this. It's been so long, but bear with me. And also bear with my lack of technology and preppedness in the sense that it came pretty much down to a choice of I could wing it, which I'm relatively good at, or I could try and prep things very properly, and God only knows when the episode would come out. So that having been said, we're going to get into the show. It'll be things that I have learned, obviously, because that's a classic segment for me, and we'll have a bit of a break. The main segment of the day is going to be the second part on suicide, and another little break, and then I think we'll end off, what are we going to end off with? Oh yes, we have a what the fuck segment for all that random shit where you're like, seriously, what the fuck? In which case, I will be doing another draw and a book review. I told you, what the fuck? I don't do book reviews, but circumstances have arisen such that that is what I'm doing. So that is a crazy brief overview of the show, and let us get started with the things that I have learned. Ding! Well, isn't that a great segment intro? Yeah, I thought so too. So it's been a whacked out month since last I was chatting with you, which I do believe was an Abysmal Witch episode too, so it's been quite some time since we've had a regular episode. And before that was the Mad Hatter with the Zombieland. Oh my god, when was the last time I talked sane? Probably in 1976 when I was 5 years old. No, I'm sure I wasn't sane at five. I'm pretty sure I've never been sane. So riding that particular wave, let's get on into it. So the month of November, as I mentioned in the last episode, I was doing NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, and I wrote just over 50,000 words in just under 30 days, for which I am very, very proud. There is something to be said for taking on a whacked out challenge that has specific goals, attainable goals, measurable goals, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. In case you're wondering what the heck I suddenly went off to there, that is the classic SMART goal setting, S-M-A-R-T, where your goals are specific, they are measurable, they are attainable, most quite important, they are realistic, and they are timely. And I'm having a feeling that I'm going to start doing a segment on time-related things, which will be viewpoints on time, how you spend time, relaxing, getting busy, goal setting, time management, all that whacked out shit, because it's something that for myself at least has been an ongoing learning experience. And I figure if I needed all that learning experience and time and etc., that just maybe other people do. So I will share what little insights I have for you with that. But anyhow, in this particular case, NaNoWriMo totally fit the bill on all those counts. It was a great goal. Obviously, you don't actually write an entire novel and 50,000 words, given that most novels are about 90. So I have over half a novel and a really good idea of what I'm going to do. Now I get to start. Really, I need to go back and outline and plan. And you don't need to know that. But there's more work to be done, and I've totally become obsessed with two things over the month of November. One was writing, and the other is mead. So the writing thing, to take something that I do love to do, it's pretty much my my dream job if I could live as a writer, which is pretty much a non-existent possibility because they get paid shit. But if I could, oh my god. Oh my god. Talk about your utter insanity, global happy, ooh, tingles down to the toes and the tips of the hair kind of joy. So that is the important part for the podcast perspective, is taking something that you love and adore and just possibly your dream, and it may be dream job, it may be dream relationship, it could be dream in any part of your life, and taking a step to make it real, because it doesn't get real unless you take steps towards it. That's a basic thing, unless you've got the luck of not just the Irish but the leprechaun shoved up so far that you are, you know, spouting rainbows out of every orifice. For most of us, that isn't the case, and so realistic, practical steps towards goals are totally the way to go. And that's what I did. So huge proud to me. On a related note to that, the month of November did many wonderful things, except for my pocketbook, which I won't go particularly into, except to say that I got an absolutely fabulous deal on a treadmill. And if you're going, what the fuck does treadmills have to do with writing? Well, it does, and allow me to explain. So I was at the Surrey International Writers Conference at the towards the end of October, and one of the keynote speakers at it was talking all about his tread desk. So he'd seen this report from a doctor about how, you know, we're meant to stand and to walk and to move, and we're not meant to sit in these chairs at desks for 8 hours or more a day. And the doctor had come up with a really, really expensive way of managing this, which essentially boils down to you have a desk and you have a treadmill, and the two are set up so that you can work from one to the other. So he went to Canadian Tire and bought himself a cheap-ass treadmill and tore it kind of apart and put some shelf kind of stuff in there, and off he went. And he dropped something like 40 pounds in 2 years just by walking and writing. And this seems really fabulous for me. I'm always trying to squeeze more time into the day. How the hell do you get everything that you want to do into a day? How? And those of you with kids, my mind boggles. Absolutely and completely and utterly boggles. I do not know how you do it. Oh my god. It's just amazing to me. So I went out all inspired off this, going, okay, NaNoWriMo was going to start in a week, and I went out, bought a treadmill, got a fabulous deal. It was $1,000 off, only cost me like $600. Oh my god. And set it up with, this is where the creative part comes in, because, you know, I can't be bothered to try and actually build things, because when I use, I'm not allowed most power tools or sharp things, and hot things aren't really good either. Yeah, I have one cut on my finger and another one's got a blister burn on it today. So, yeah, anyhow, so I have to make do with things that are not necessarily, built. And yeah, but I got lucky. My treadmill has perfect arms for putting a shelf on, and then I build up to other shelfnesses, and I have an ergonomically proper heighted, monitor, and a remote, a wireless keyboard, and I went to town, and I wrote, probably a good half of my 50,000 words could quite possibly have been on the treadmill. It was pretty freaking awesome. So that is something that, for those of you who are out there and wondering how to get a little more exercise into your life and spend a lot of time on a computer, the straight typing is easier than trying to do more finicky stuff, but it is absolutely a way that you can multitask in the best way possible. So that's my public health announcement, I guess you could say, a public service announcement. And that kind of sums up the whole writing goals, living your dreams part. And then the other part, oh, mead. I love mead. I'm sure I've mentioned mead before. Mead is honey-based alcohol. So instead of fermenting grapes like you do for wine, you ferment honey and you get mead. So yes, it can be a very sweet drink, but it can also be rather dry and rather potent. In the SCA, which is the Society for Creative Anachronism, it is frequently referred to as panty remover because it goes down so easy and it goes straight to your head. It's fabulous. It really is fabulous. And you can do all kinds of fun things with mead by putting different fruits in it. One of the meads, you notice I said one of the meads that I have going at the moment is actually a rose mead that has the rosebuds used in steeping tea and rose hips in it. Oh, it's just divine. My coven mate is talking about doing a rose and jasmine mead, and a group of us got together, including the witch of Forest Grove, Sarah, and did a bunch of magical meads where we actually put in herbs of certain types of magical natures in together and made a sabbat mead. And I don't remember what we called it, if it was the Aphrodite mead, aphrodisiac mead, or if it had a more subtle name, but oh, it's got strawberries and some fabulous herbs, and cannot wait to see what that one comes out as. We also made a Saturn mead, which is so cool. I'm really looking forward to that one too. Anyhow, now that I had finally experienced how to make mead, because leaping into the unknown territory with minimal instructions is kind of hard for me, so I had my little hands-on experience and finally actually met my goal for 2010. One of my goals for 2010 was to learn how to make mead. I'm so happy to actually meet a goal. Apparently this episode start is all about goals, setting goals, making goals. There is something fabulous about going, this is really something I find cool and I want to do it, and actually managing to get to the point where you have the experience and you do it. If there's something like that on your list in the back of your head, you know, look at it, think about it. 2011 is coming around the corner, and while for at least the Wiccans in the world and many other pagans, Samhain and November 1st is the new year, that doesn't stop me, at least, from thinking of the secular new year as when all those new year's resolutions and goals for the year that I set up. I think in part just because of the year change. So it's easy to say my goals for 2011. And if you're setting your goals at Samhain 2010, do you call them Samhain goals 2010 or Samhain goals 2011? See, very confused. But goals for 2011, very easy. And every year I do that. On New Year's Eve, I take out last year's set of goals and I have a look at it and review it, what worked, what didn't work, and I do actually look at them throughout the year, because if you don't look at your goals throughout the year, then you're going to get nowhere, because you look at it, a piece of paper, you write them down, you shove it in a corner, you never go back. Well, how are you going to remember what it was that you wanted to do unless they were goals that were so easy to attain that there was no point in writing them down in the first place? So keep your goals in a visible place, but make a few goals. You know, what is it that you want from life? What is it that you really want to learn, or you really want to do, or you really want to experience, and maybe you've wanted it for years, but you've never made that extra effort? Make the effort. Start by writing it down. Make yourself accountable. Look at it and make it happen, right? Oh, because there are a lot of goals that unfortunately never quite make it. It happens. It feels so good to actually be able to go, yeah, this one was a big one. I've had it on my mind for a couple of years, and I've done it. And you know what I discovered? Oh my God, it's easy. Holy crap. I mean, it takes a little time, you know, a little babying and stuff, but it was easy. Not nearly so hard as I had worked it up in my head to be. So get out there, figure out your goals for 2011. It's right around the corner. We have, you know, probably, what, 3.5 weeks until New Year's? Oh my God. Okay, I'm breathing. There's just so much fucking shit going on in December. You have the idea. I know you do, because most people have way too much fucking shit going on in December. Which, let's take public service announcement number two. It's December. It's insane. There's people and get-togethers, and there's more socializing. I swear, we can do more socializing in the month of December than we do the entire rest of the year. And there's so many things that we expect of ourselves, of decorating, of hospitality-related things, of having parties, of going to parties, of being social, of getting the gifts, of wrapping the gifts. And it becomes so easily overwhelming that it can lose meaning. And you hear about it all the time. And the people who are not thrilled or not happy, if you're not enjoying the holidays, fuck it, you're doing too much. Seriously. If you're putting up all the decorations, and all you're thinking is, fuck, this is really annoying, and you take no pleasure from putting them up, and you take no real pleasure from seeing them up, then why the hell are you putting them up? The world will not collapse if you don't decorate for Christmas. The world will not collapse if you go a little easy on your Christmas dinner. Now, admittedly, if you have kids in your family, you're a little screwed, like young kids, because there is an expectation that we perpetuate for kids of the joy of Christmas morning. And that has nothing to do with it being Christ Day. It has everything to do with family and social engagement and joy in each other. Anyhow, so my recommendation, take it a little easy on yourself and on everybody else and just relax into the season. Go, oh my God, yeah, this is crazy. And if you can go, it's crazy, but I'm loving it. I'm going to have fun with it. And when I need a day off, I'm just not going to go to that event. That will see you through, or at least hopefully so. Find the things that bring you joy, bring you peace. Make time for them. Make time for yourself. Make time for the ones you really care about, and to hell with the rest. Really, to hell with it. If you're not living your life with joy and to bring joy into it, what the fuck are you living it for? Which is kind of funny for me to say that when I'm about to talk about suicide in a little bit. But anyhow, the whole point is to bring joy to life, to really savor it, to get into living. And not living by society strictures, not living by some code of expected conduct established by mainstream society. We're to live based on our own feelings and experiences and joys and screw everybody else. You know, buy into it when it makes you happy to buy into it and ditch it when it makes you happy to ditch it. Don't feel trapped. Never trap yourself, because you're not. Especially around Christmas. You are not trapped. You can always say no. With that little codicil about little kids, because quite honestly, if you've got little kids, there are things that, as in any relationship, that we can give to people. And if you steal Christmas from a little kid, I think you're just mean. Why? Because I loved Christmas as a kid. It was my big joy, my big happy. And I would hate to see any kid not get it just because it didn't work out. But you can engage the kids into the experience and take the load off of you. Just because you're doing it to make sure your kids have a good time does not mean that you have to do everything and everything to the nth degree and all on your own. There's always ways to balance it. So keep that in mind. I've totally gotten off track and I'm trying desperately to remember where I was going with all this. Ah, la 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 la. I should have a little, you know, please stay tuned music that I can insert periodically to buy myself that few seconds of time as I figure out where the fuck I was going. Did I mention I'm a tad rambly today? I think I did. I think that part I managed to get out. So the mead making has been marvelous. It's taken a bit of time and they're all bubbling upstairs. I have a plain orange spice mead, which if anyone wants the recipe, it's really simple. Just email me, penniesinthewell@gmail.com, and I can get you started at least by instruction. Now remember, I'm a novice. I'm a noob. I know very, very little. I can just tell you that basic recipe to get started, but look to others for guidance and for mentorship if you want to get into mead making, and I recommend it because it tastes so good and it's so easy, and all it takes is a whole hell of a lot of patience, because the stuff that I've put in there is going to probably be about a year before I get to drink it. Sad, but true. So, other things that I've learned, oh my God, it's just been insane. I don't even think I can go there. So we're going to move on from the segment. Yes, I do believe we are. And take a little break. Now, as I had mentioned, I'm going to do part two of the suicide episodes. I guess it's a trilogy. I have a trilogy. That's kind of cool. And this one is about dealing with suicide when it's a friend or a loved one who is suicidal. And this, again, is all from my personal experience. This is not me as a counselor, because I'm not. So take from it what you can, what you will. Ah, I suddenly remembered other stuff I was going to talk about. But let me finish this. So when the break comes, the song that I'm going to play is Sarah McLachlan's Hold On, because I think that it really speaks to how I felt when I was dealing with a very suicidal friend. And yeah, so I'm going to let the song speak for itself. It's also a fabulous song. She wrote it, I believe, when a friend of hers was dying of cancer, which is a very different background, but the feeling it evokes is very well related. So the other thing that I wanted to do was a segment on perspective. So the big P segment.
Open your mind,
your spirit,
your heart. Soul.
Open your soul,
your heart, spirit.
Your mind.
Open to the world around you and change your perspective.
And now it's time for the Big P. You know, if you ever listen to me and go, I wonder if she's that whacked in real life, the answer, dear listeners, is yes. Oh yeah, I'm this fucked in real life. Fucked, whacked, nuts, crazy. Haven't seen sanity since I was a blip in my father's eye. Any way you want to look at it, nuts. So welcome back. Thank you for downloading the show. Thank you for making it through to this point. Of course, you could be fleeing in droves. Well, that's a very negative thought. You know, it's very easy for those kind of self-deprecating negative thoughts to kind of go in and grab hold and do really nasty things to how we see ourselves, and that's just not right. Instead, I will assume that all of you love me, and that you're building pretty but not creepy altars to me. Okay, maybe not that either. Let's go somewhere in the middle, and that we're all just friends, hanging out, sipping a little glass of mead, round a fire, as it's maybe snowing outside for those of you in southern hemisphere type places and are going, eh, it's fucking hot, what the hell are you talking about? We'll sit around a bonfire in a hopefully slightly chilly evening. But we're all hanging out, chatting, and just conversing and communicating. Ooh, yeah. C words. They're abundant. They're very cool. Okay. I've rambled enough on that. What I wanted to talk about in this section, or segment, I should say, is in regards to an email I got from Velma Nightshade on the Suicide Part 1 episode. And by the way, thank you everyone for the feedback. I got more feedback on that episode than I have on any episode to date. I don't get a lot of feedback. I wonder why that is. It's kind of strange. I'm like, Anyway, it's all good. I love feedback. And oh, side note, I think I'm caught up on email, so if I didn't get back to you, I lost your email. Email me, please, again. I'm not always the best with email. This is why time management is such an obsessive thing for me. Anyhow, Velma sent me an email in regards to the suicide part, and she was asking if my faith or my spiritual practice helped me through it. And it was kind of weird because I had never really thought about it. You know, in some ways, I didn't analyze the experience that I had. I just lived it. So I spent, you know, a little time afterwards kind of contemplating and thinking. And because it wasn't an immediate striking yes, oh hell yes, no, it saw me through. Because that's not how I felt about it. But what eventually kind of came through, in part, I fell as hard as I did. And I went through as much crap as I did because I'm Wiccan. And because I believe in that basic, probably Hermetic, I've looked it up but I've forgotten, tenet of know thyself. I mean, it's an ancient, magical, and probably other things, phrase. And that delving personally because of my spirituality led me into the very nasty places that where I had probably my closest calls with death. So this was kind of later in years. Basically my last really serious bout with depression, well, yeah, the truly big serious bout with depression. And So in a way, you could say that, you know, it didn't help me. It actually led me down into depression. But what it did is it took me to the source of it. And I was finally able to deal with things because of that. So I find that the Wiccan path in particular, because that's the one I follow, it's easier for me to speak from that point of view. Whether or not the other pagan paths would help with this, I assume so. But I speak from a Wiccan perspective. And it gives you tools. Let me put it that way. It gives you tools to deal with things. It also gives you tools to go looking for things. And so, like I said, in my case, it actually brought things to the surface and made my life a living hell for a while. It also did give me the tools to deal with it. But I wasn't thinking, oh, this is my Wiccan thing and it's therefore helping me. By that point, this was simply the life I lived. And it wasn't like I was doing spell work particularly to get me through. I wasn't consciously meditating to work it through. There were a lot of things that I wasn't consciously doing, but subconsciously, it was the way I lived. Working with deity, I wasn't going out and kind of doing full-out ritual to have Hecate come to me and help me work through shit. But, you know, when you're slumped, oh, there was one night. I have mother issues. And shit had come up, and oh my god. I was blaming my goddess for everything I hated in my mother. Which, she doesn't listen to the podcast, so there's at least not that I'm aware of. If she does, well, life could get more interesting. Anyhow, I had broken down, bathroom floor, sobbing and such. And it wasn't the formalized working with my goddess that was helping me. It was the direct emotional connection to her that was helping me. I wasn't framing things in a working perspective and going, oh, this will help. I was simply living the life that I lived, and it helped. I also was, but at the time, our coven was four people still, and they were amazing support through it. And because we had such a strong regular schedule, because we're kind of compulsive, that held me to staying connected and working with the people closest to me. And even though I didn't necessarily share a lot of what was going on, I was still working with them. I was still connected to them emotionally. I still had this investment and this kind of accountability to keep me going, alive, on track, however you want to view it. So it's interesting to me, because the answer to her question is that consciously, no. I don't think Wicca or my spiritual practice was something I was even thinking about, let alone specifically using it to help me. But because it's so ingrained, so in my bones, that everything that I did, the way that I live, was already infused with my spirituality. And that infusion and the way that I live helped me through it. So that is just an interesting take from the last suicide episode, and to answer Velma's question a little more in depth from the email that I sent her back. And it kind of gets us into the main segment. So let's take a little break, listen to that Sarah McLachlan song, who, believe it or not, both this one and the Bare Naked Lady song, I went looking to try and get a hold of somebody for permission. There is no contact info out there. Apparently, even to get like contacting an agent requires special knowledge of the music world, or at least from my, you know, 10-15 minutes of Google Foo failure. So I did try to get permission to play it, and hopefully, given the topic and subject matter, she won't mind. Thank you.
Hold on to yourself, for this is gonna hurt like hell.
Welcome back to episode 19 of Pennies in the Well, and this is the second in the series on suicide, and this particular episode is going to focus on what it's like to have someone suicidal in your life. So this is more for the friends and family and loved ones of someone who's suicidal rather than for the suicidal person themselves. And I have three disclaimers. The first is, of course, that I am not a healthcare professional or a counselor or a psychologist or any of those type of things. I do not have any license for this whatsoever. This is personal experience talking. So in other words, don't get messed up by my shit. Take care of yourself. Disclaimer all over the land. And if this upsets you, please talk to somebody. This should hopefully... Ideally, this opens dialogue. It doesn't cause people problems. So if you are bothered, upset, disturbed, talk to somebody. Email me, or more likely find somebody in person that you can talk about it with and through and sort it out, because this type of thing can really bring up a lot of emotional stuff for people. So take care of yourself. Disclaimer numero two. Obviously, all of the details that I'm going to share, because I have some personal experience dealing with someone else who is suicidal, will be changed to protect their identity. And number three, this is for anyone who is suicidal or has been suicidal. This could be really hard hearing from the other point of view, because it's so easy, or at least it was for me when suicidal, to take anything that wasn't, 100% supportive and there for me kind of thing. Any hint of something against that was automatically led to me going, well, I'm a horrible person. Of course they don't care about me. Of course they don't want to be there for me. Why would anybody? I'm just such a nasty, horrible person, or worthless, or whatever you want to insert in the way of horrible thoughts. This is not meant that way. Do not get this in your head that way. I am going to describe the difficulties of being on the other side of the fence. This does not mean that your friends and loved ones don't want to be on the other side of that fence. It just means that they also have difficulties in dealing with the situation. And you should not let this stop you from ever talking to anybody. Okay, got it? Clear? Yes? Agreed? Okay. So with all of that in mind, let's kind of get started. Now, I think I mentioned the last time that I've talked to a lot of suicidal people, and I have. Oh, it's kind of bizarre. I've had people, random strangers, come up to me and go, I'm suicidal. And that is more something I'm going to talk about in the next show on suicide, about how do you deal with it when somebody comes up and goes, I'm suicidal. And we'll get into those kind of nitty-gritties then. And I actually hope, if I'm really, really lucky and life doesn't screw me over too hard, to get that out before Christmas, because this is a really hard time of year for people. And the dark, the gray, the all about family and not necessarily in a good way, it promotes feelings of loneliness and all the rest of it. So I'm going to hopefully get that out before Christmas, but I can't promise, just because Christmas time, I refer you to earlier in the show and the whole psychotic, oh my God, manicness of December. So there's only one that personal direct experience that I've had with someone in my life being actively suicidal. And I will give you some basic, well, I'm going to walk you through it, again, with certain details changed, because, well, actually, mostly, it doesn't matter what the details are, because it's unidentifiable who it is, just from the basic generics of it. So, this was someone I knew, decently well, not one of my most immediate close friends, but, I only have, three or four of those, so, so it was someone in the next ring of people, so someone I was pretty close to, and stuff had happened, and we're going to go with a her. We're going to call it a her, just to make life easier. Stuff had happened in her life, and had led to her feeling very depressed, and, well, obviously suicidal, and these happenings, in this particular case, we will say it is relationship issues, because that is often the case, but it could easily be career issues, home issues. It really, as I said previously, suicide comes down to feeling hopeless, and hopeless can take a lot of forms, from I'm never going to find someone to share my life, and I'm going to be alone forever, which is a very scary thought, to I'm never going to succeed at that which I care for, and I'm forever going to be trapped. Notice the stuck, the trapped, the alone, there's a certain theme that goes on here, regardless. So, this particular person had gone through something that was emotionally negative, and, as I said before, there's a tendency for people who are suicidal, we tend to be suicidal. It's kind of almost like a knee-jerk reaction on how you deal. In her particular case, it did go that way. I went to visit her, and with another friend of mine, and we were going to hang out, and when we got there, it's funny, because I think she volunteered the information. We discovered that she had used pills to try and kill herself that day, which was a bit of a shock, to say the least. I mean, you go over to visit somebody, and you discover that hours before, they had tried to kill themselves, and the pills had actually caused her to throw up, and so in the end, she hadn't actually managed to complete the suicide, but she'd certainly attempted. And, you know, we did our best to kind of talk and discuss it with her, and as with most suicidal people, you know, she was happy not to have died. But it was questionable, right? Like, there wasn't a full release there for her. And I'm going to tell the story, and we'll see when I'm not exactly sure if I'm going to put the commentary at the end or interspersed. So we discovered that it had happened, and shock. I mean, realistically, as the people hearing it, I'm sure we were in shock. You know, there was that, oh crap, holy crap, oh my God, this person that I know, she could have been dead. Like, right now, we could have had, you know, been dealing with cops and family and funerals, not talking to her and watching some show on TV. Shock, absolutely. And even though I understand suicidal, you know, perfectly well, been there and nearly attempted that, it's still different when you're faced with that moment of, oh my God, this person has actually tried. And it's someone I know. And to think that someone you know, that is the only solution that they could find was to kill themselves is really shocking. I mean, it may for some be a slap in the face. It could be horrifying. It could be completely disbelieving. It's a huge impact when you find out. Even just from a sideways issue. I had at my old job, one day a coworker of mine called in to say, she left a voicemail to tell me that she wasn't going to be in that day because she went home the night before and her son had hung himself. And so she didn't think she'd be in that day. And even just hearing the voicemail, I was in shock a little bit. And I had to have somebody else listen to it and go, did I hear what I think I heard? That was a very, very tragic situation. Like I said, suicide, it's been around me fairly often. So in the particular case with our friend, we spent the night and talked to her and, you know, working on the reassuring and stuff. And she wasn't feeling well and she wasn't able to keep food down at that point. But, you know, she'd done kind of a job on her stomach, so no surprise. And then the next day, I'm at work, and I guess the fog had lifted, and I'm sitting there going, this isn't good. She poisoned herself. This isn't good. What if there's additional problems? So, of course, I finally kick in with the Google and look it up, and oh, hell yeah. You know, what she had taken was such that it could totally shut down. It was either, I think it was her liver or her kidneys. I'm thinking liver. Yeah, liver. Totally shut down her liver and still kill her. And that she needed to go to the hospital. So I'm like, oh crap, okay. I phoned her and told her that I was coming to pick her up. The couple of things in that. One is, it took me a long time to forgive myself for not doing something as soon as we found out. For just sitting and talking to her the night that she had attempted. Rather than going, oh my God, let's look this up now. Is there something more we need to be concerned about? Do we need to get you to a hospital? Obviously, if it happened again, I'd be right on top of that whole hospital thing because I've been through it now. But the first time, I didn't know what to do. And that whole shock thing just went, she seems fine. We'll just go with it. So, of course, once I realized that it had gone on, oh, I was beating myself up horribly. And this is something I'm sure is pretty damn common to people who either have friends or family members who attempt or complete suicide, that there's such this strong feeling of personal responsibility. of failure, of why the hell didn't I do this? Why the hell didn't I notice that? And there's a lot of personal beating up that goes with it. And I can tell you from the other side that I never wanted people to know if I was suicidal. I didn't want them interfering. I didn't want them to feel bad. And I also didn't want them trying to change anything. I was going to deal with it on my own, one way or the other. And so I didn't necessarily, at least not in my personal opinion, give any indication of what I was going through. And from things that friends have said, I was pretty damn good at that. And I think a lot of people are. You know, there are different types of suicidal people, but the people like me who don't want other people to know, well, make sure you don't know. And you can't, as that friend, that lover, that family member, you can't beat yourself up for not realizing something they didn't tell you. Now, if someone ever tells you they're suicidal, take it seriously. Even if they're joking, take it seriously. That's the best that you can do. But if they're not saying things to you and they're not making obvious signs, or even if there was a sign, you know what? Hindsight 2020, if you didn't see it at the time, you didn't see it. And you have to forgive yourself. Like, and it doesn't matter if the person completed or attempted, or attempted and didn't complete. The point is that you can't hate yourself for failing to be there for them if they don't give you that helping hand of saying, I have a problem. Because it's not, you are not responsible for that other person. They are. And you have to forgive yourself if you're ever in that position and you don't clue. Took me a long time and I still get a little twitchy about it because it's easier to say than it is to feel. But I know I certainly did the best that I could do at the time, and I did act as soon as I realized I needed to act. So, and hopefully, maybe by my talking about stuff like this, if someone else is ever in that position, you'll find it easier to act, which is kind of cool. So I got to her place and I told her she had an option. I could drive her to the hospital or an ambulance could come and take her to the hospital. Her choice. The good point about that is it was kind of like, it reminds me of a friend of mine when she's dealing with her like 4-year-old or her kids in general, especially when they were younger, and going, well, you can have orange juice or you can have milk. Not saying, what do you want to drink? There is no what do you want in a broad scope. You have two choices and you can choose from those two choices. So it eliminates any arguing. It's not like I was saying, you know, what do you want to do? Where she could go, I want to just crawl in bed and then I have to fight her and get her to the hospital. No. I told her she was going. It was just a question. And so I give her a little empowerment. She could choose her method of how she was getting there, but she was going. And that is a technique I do recommend if you're ever in that situation. It's very useful. Just, yeah, parenting inspired tip of the day. So she chose ambulance, and you go through a very interesting experience when you tell them that you have someone who's attempted suicide. You end up with cops who show up first because they want to make sure that the environment is safe for the paramedics and to assess what's going on. And so we went through that, and then into the ambulance we went, and off we went to the hospital, and it was a good thing. There was a lot of medications involved. She was very sick for several days. She ended up in ICU, and there was questions of whether or not her liver would need a transplant. So pretty intense shit. And through this, so of course, you know, you get there, and I've got her purse and stuff, and including her smart form Palm Pilot, whatever the heck it was at the time. I mean, this was many years ago. And I got to phone family. Hi, you've never heard of me or talked to me before, but I'm calling because your daughter's in the hospital because she tried to kill herself. Trust me, that's not exactly the most fun conversation, and I got to repeat it with kind of all the important people in her life because it was really important at that point. I mean, one, to notify people, you know, it's for the family, it's, you know, this is your relative and obviously you should know what's going on. But for the friends especially, of going, you know, your friend is in a lot of pain and she's now in the hospital and your support would be really, really helpful right now. So I made the phone calls and got people coming in various shifts to stay with her and visit. And then the friend who had been with me the night before showed up, and I got to go home. And I got home and went, I don't even know how to deal with this at this point. Obviously this is a hot button thing for me as well, very touchy subject given my own personal history, but it's also just horribly rough. I had, and this certainly gives nothing away because, you'll see in a second. This very day, today, this very day, I had a faculty member, and we have like 55 of them in our department. I work at a university, so, you know, this all makes sense, really, I swear. And he had a student, of which we have, you know, like 1,000 students, so really, anonymity, totally covered here, who had come into his office today and was suicidal. And he spent hours talking to the kid, and he did everything right. And like I said, I'll talk about that next time on the next episode about suicide, about how to handle that. He did everything right, and, you know, the kid will hopefully be going and getting help from counseling services, and the faculty member is going to, you know, stay in touch, and all the good things. And at the end of it, you know, my additional bit for him was to go and, you know, this is a really intense, stressful thing. And he's like, oh, yeah, no, it's like a total adrenaline shot. And I'm like, yeah, exactly. So go home and look after yourself. And he goes, yeah, I'm going home and I'm getting myself a big ass drink. Probably without the ass, though. I don't think he swears. And yeah, it's huge. Even that single day encounter with someone that he knows somewhat, you know, he has some closeness, but, you know, not necessarily a lot. Huge impact on him and how he was feeling. So I guess what I'm trying to say there, gotta love that dead air moment, eh? This is why I should have someone else in here and then they can talk as well. But then, oh my God, I wouldn't get to talk as much. The downside of doing a duo. I know, I'm being silly. I'm trying to add a little levity when it's a very kind of deep and intense subject. So it takes a hell of a lot out of the person dealing with the suicidal person. It just does. So I got home from the hospital and I pretty much turned right around and went out to visit a guy that I had met a couple times, and I needed that, not someone too close to me, but someone that I could just go hide in someone else's world for a little bit. And he will forever be endeared to me because I phoned him up. Like I said, I didn't know him particularly well. And I went and said that a friend of mine had attempted to kill herself, and I'd just taken her to the hospital and I was back, and you know what, I didn't want to be alone. And he said, come over. There was no pause, no hesitation, and I went over. Forever endeared for that, because there wasn't any hemming or hawing, and that makes a world of difference. So looking after yourself is huge if you're in this type of situation, because you can only be there for the other person so long as you remain kind of whole and healthy in yourself. And it's a huge emotional and mental and physical drain. You'd go, why physical? You're just sitting on your ass. Well, your emotions take a physical toll, and the stress takes a physical toll, and you have to look after yourself big time, because it is the only way to really be there for the other person and take turns and build a support network. Like I said, I called her family and her friends, and her family flew out and her friends showed up, and we took turns, because for any one person to try and do all that is probably too much unless you're like Superman. So I have made it clear, right, that she's fine. She got through it all. Okay, so yeah, did the hospital bit, and she was there for a while, and we dealt with it, and time passed a little bit. She was doing pretty well. We were spending a lot of time with her. more time than we had previously, and I'll come back to that. That's actually an important statement. But time passed a little bit, and the original cause emotionally was still there and undealt with in its own way. By going to the hospital after having attempted suicide, and yeah, her kidneys came through fine. She didn't need a transplant. There was referrals, of course, to psychiatrists and support groups and such, but they weren't quite working for her at that point. I think my guess is that because the underlying issue was unresolved and the emotional component to it was still really strong, even though she was ecstatic right afterwards that she hadn't died, those emotional causes came right back and she ended up back in the same emotional place. And, you know, we were keeping, you know, pretty close eye on her, but when somebody really wants to kill themselves, they will find a way. You can't stop them. You can't, which is why also you can't take on all the guilt of the world or all the guilt for the other person dying if that's where they end up. You can do only what you can do. And it's a really, really hard thing to accept, but it's true. So I'm not advocating that, you know, you go, they're suicidal, that's their problem. Not at all. I do advocate that you take action, that you get involved. But when it comes right down to it, the fact is, if someone wants to kill themselves, they will kill themselves. However, that being said, suicide is the most preventable type of death, because pretty much any intervention can head off somebody from actually trying to kill themselves. So it's very responsive, and people are very responsive to intervention. But if you get that case where, no, damn it, they want to go and they're going to do it, and you've done everything that you can to try and intervene and to make a difference in their life and they still do it, that's not you, that's them. In my opinion, this is all my opinion. I am not a psychologist, but that's my take. So, no shit, there we were. We were supposed to go to a movie one day, and she didn't end up coming with us. And there was something in her voice on that day as I was talking to her, and I had that kind of moment where I'm like, And I asked something like, are you okay? And she went, oh, yeah, no, I'm fine. I didn't ask if she was going to try and kill herself or if she was feeling suicidal. I thought about it, and I didn't ask. The fact is, the question that I asked her, whatever it happened to be, was something that she could honestly say, honestly lie to, right? Where she could give the very misleading, you know, not technically lying, because it was a, you know, direct answer to the question, like, are you fine? Sure, I'm fine. I'm going to kill myself. I've completely decided to do that. And so I feel really calm and centered, right? Like, all she did was say, yeah, no, I'm fine, because the whole rest of it is in the back of her head. So it's not a lie, because I don't know about the other suicidal people, but from the few that I've met, there's this weird almost compulsion to be very honest in the wording. It's like if somebody asks you if you're suicidal, you might avoid the question, but I'd never lie to it. Maybe that's just me, but she had the same deal. And I realized afterwards that I hadn't asked her straight out, and I actually asked her later on about it, and she went, yeah, no, you didn't ask straight out, and so I didn't tell you. And if I had asked straight out, she would have said. So that is, that ties into the next show on it, but always, 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 if you're wondering, just ask. You know, you cannot, and I will give away this myth now, you cannot make someone suicidal by asking them if they are feeling suicidal. By asking the question, you do not put the thought in their head. And this shit, this is not just me. You can look up this type of myth thing in the literature on suicide. There's also, I'll get into the details on that in the next show, sorry. But again, this is not my opinion, this one is fact, that you cannot make someone suicidal by asking them if they feel that way. You cannot make someone suicidal by using the word suicide or talking about death or anything like that. Trust me, if they're suicidal, they're already there. They're already totally familiar with the territory. And if they're not suicidal, they'll just go, no, I'm not. But even for those people, I think just being asked is, it's a sign of interest and caring. And how can that be a bad thing? And it's not. It is never a bad thing to ask to, but I'm digressing just a tad. So I didn't ask that day. And I had a feeling. So I went to visit later, I think that same day or the next day, and I didn't get an answer. And her car was there, and I didn't get an answer. And I phoned her, and I didn't get an answer. And eventually I snuck into the building. You know what? As a girl, it's actually pretty easy to sneak into a building. People are pretty willing to kind of let you get the door. Anyway, bad etiquette for the building, but really useful for me. So I went up, and I phoned her from my cell phone, and I could hear her phone ringing inside. So I was like, shit, you know, the odds of her going out without her cell phone or her car, maybe, but cell phone, no fucking way. So I'm pounding on the door, I'm kicking the door, and I'm getting fucking nowhere. So I call a friend of mine to come over, because at this point I'm like, shit, I need support. I'm back into the territory of, I don't know what to do. And he gets there, tries to rouse her through the door, nothing. Building manager happens to show up in the midst of this, and he can't let us in, of course, because, you know, there's laws about shit like that. So we called the cops, and the cops show up, and I get the third degree of, and why do you think she's suicidal? And I go through the explanation, and they go in, and of course they can't confirm anything to me, but I did end up in my second ambulance ride of the year. And off we went back to the hospital. And yeah, so started round two. And round two, let me tell you, a lot fucking harder than round one. Because, again, this is not to make the suicidal people feel bad about their world. I'm just talking about what it feels like on the other side of the fence. And on that other side of the fence, you're like, shit, man, I did this once. We did it. Why the hell are we doing it again? This is, you know, it's not fair. This sucks. It's horrible. It hurts so much. And you were supposed to hopefully be getting better. And I was trying to help you get better. And why didn't you get there? And why are we back here? And yeah, there's blame onto the person who's suicidal, at least for me. But you're also sitting there going, yeah, but, you know, clearly their emotional state sucks. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here. And so you hate yourself for doing this whole blame thing when you know you shouldn't be blaming. But the fact is that you do feel frustrated and hurt and just, oh, so many dark feelings and no outlet. And it's just a miasma of nasty. And of course, you're not supposed to feel any of that stuff. You're just supposed to be supportive and helpful and, you know, and you do it. You know, we did. Absolutely did and did it again. But it was harder the second time. And yeah, it was harder. And I have a coworker who has had multiple people in her family die from suicide who have completed. And she had one family member who attempted repeatedly, was the kind of classic attention-getting suicide person who, you know, they lost track in the 20s of the number of times that this woman had attempted to kill herself, but, you know, always made it that she was always found or it never fully went through with it and stuff. But it actually made it really hard for my coworker to be able to deal with suicide in that other side of things, because she has this image of her head of it's an attention seeking behavior, and that the people, you know, that whole the person not following through, not that I'm recommending that you do, just saying that because she kept doing it, it wore the family down until you just can't care anymore. And I can totally see that, how there's only so much you can be invested in that life if they're not holding to life themselves. Wow, that was kind of existential, wasn't it? Oh, again, I really, really don't want someone who's suicidal to listen to this and go, oh, this means that my family are just going to get tired and annoyed and frustrated and I'm being a burden to them if I do it. Well, actually, hold on. I'm going to be a little bit of a spade as a spade. And, you know, if you're suicidal and you need a lot of support from your friends and family, there is a burden there. But it's a burden that we take up willingly, right? We are frequently burdens to each other. If you have the flu and someone takes care of you, you are a burden to that person taking care of you. That doesn't mean they don't want to do it. It doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. It's a natural thing for us to be kind of interwoven burdens to each other and to look after each other. Absolutely. So yeah, you are, but it doesn't mean that they don't want it. You know, having that burden of each other, that means that there is a relationship and that there is a connection and that there is caring. And so don't be a dumbass. That's what I'm going to say on that front. No dumbasses. I've had enough dumbasses in my life. Very few smartasses. Well, no, wait. As I say that, I'm like, no, I've known a lot of smartasses. Dumbasses and smartasses. What's with all the asses? Oh, very strange aside. If you want to see a really cool pic of an apple that looks like an ass, check out my blog. Several posts ago, I had this apple, and it really seriously looks like an ass. It's even got an asshole in it. And the blog is abysmalwitch.wordpress.com. So, coming back to my story, as it were, and all its little insights. So we went through the hospital again, and we called the family again, and they didn't fly out this time because they were feeling very similarly. One of them flew out, I think. I think one relative flew out and stayed with her for a while, which was really good. And then after the hospital times, then it was, you know, now we're really trying to make sure that she gets through shit and gets off to the counseling and stuff. And it was, some of it was hard. If the person doesn't want to take the steps to look after themselves, it can get really difficult and frustrating. You're like, dude, if you're going to sit on your ass and do nothing but wallow, of course you're going to feel like shit. Get off your ass and go see a psychiatrist or a group therapy or do something to help make it better. Of course, it's not that easy. It's very easy to say. It's not that easy to do. And people find their own time and manner of taking that step and that action to get themselves help. Which is the other frustrating part. You can't make them heal on your schedule. Damn it. They heal on their schedule. But that's also understanding the lines of where they stop and you start are really important. Don't blur those lines. Don't lose yourself in the other person. It's ultimately their life and you want to help them to live through it and be supported through it, but to live it themselves and to support themselves. So you want to give them a hand up. You don't want to hold them up. That makes sense? It's like you want to help someone get to their feet and maybe offering a stabilizing hand now and again, but you don't want to have to carry them and hold all of their weight up so that they have the illusion of being standing. That's not what we're after, especially as empowered pagans, in my opinion. So, no shit, there we were. Deja vu all over again. And, excuse me. Oh, it was hard. It was fucking hard. But we put in a lot of time, my friend and I. Spent a lot of time with this person. Really worked at making sure she wasn't alone. And that she knew people cared and stuff. And we put our lives, especially my friend, on hold. And it was a bit strange. Because as I said, she was kind of in what I would consider my second circle of friends. And my first circle is very small, but they are my close, devoted, I am devoted to them friends. And this person was kind of, like I said, second tier, like friends, absolutely, but not as close. And in that time frame, it was as if we were that intense closeness. And we spent so much time there that other aspects of our lives just got shoved aside and put on hold. And the hardest part about that, and this is something that I really caution people on, I am cautioning you on as people, to really be careful about boundaries on this, because we ended up kind of in a bad situation. We weren't her closest friends, but we became her closest friends during this time frame. And the ones who were closest weren't necessarily spending nearly as much time as we were. And that was all kind of fine in a sense, but then it kept going on for many months, and I got exhausted. Like, this took the hospital exhaustion and just made it, you know, marrow deep. I mean, we're past the bones, we're into the marrow. Like, nothing left. It was all gone. I had used as much as I possibly could to support her and to help her get to a better place. And eventually went, you know what, I need my life back. I need my time back. So we put so much, and my friend was going through the same thing, but we put so much into that relationship over such a short, comparatively speaking, period of time that it's like eating too much lasagna in a period of time. I know that's a psycho reference, but it's the best I've got. My sister goes through food crazes, or at least she did when we were growing up. And, you know, the apple pie, for the perfect apple pie period, was actually lovely because we had a lot of apple pie. And, you know, even when apple pie goes wrong, it's still kind of good. But she also got on a lasagna craze of learning how to make lasagna. And I don't know how many lasagnas I had over that 3-4 month period, but I can tell you that I still can only have like one piece of lasagna before I go, you know what, I'm done, and you give me any more and I'm going to hurl. And for the love of God, no leftovers. I do not make lasagna. Not that I would cook all that much anyways, but I never buy frozen lasagna. I don't lasagna. I enjoy my single piece when I'm out somewhere, and that's it, because that period of time totally did me in for lasagna forever. It's still funny. But it was kind of that, it was so intense, and there was so much time spent with her, and it was so different from normal interactions that it got to that point where it was like an overdose of that relationship, and I had to find my own footing again, to get separate and to find my own life. And I kind of had that, okay, honey, you know, for her, you know, this was my failure in communication because I didn't know how to tell her any of this and how to explain it. And so I just started pulling back, you know, and spending less time and less time. And eventually, you know, there was that, okay, she seems to be standing on her own. Her other friends are stepping in a lot more. And I could finally let go. And unfortunately, that letting go, because it had gotten so long and too intense and too involved, that I stripped it down to pretty near nothing for a relationship with her, which went over really poorly. And I don't blame her for that. Blame me for not being better at my communication. But that's where I ended up, because I didn't set better boundaries between my life and hers while trying to get her on her feet. And that is something I think it's really important to share, because damn it, I don't want other people to be in that position. You know, when you're around someone who's suicidal, there's a lot of caregiving that goes on, and you have to be really careful about your boundaries, about how much you give, about how much you look after yourself. I know I said that earlier, but it's worth coming back to, that you really have to take care of your own well-being. I mean, if you break and crack and lose it and all the rest of it, you can't help the other person anymore. And I would also strongly recommend that you find someone to support you. A lover, a significant other, a really close friend, because if you're helping someone who is suicidal and you're dealing with that shit, you're going to need support as well. You know, it has a cumulative effect on people, and the number of people that are affected by a single suicidal person is somewhere between like 7 to 10, and that's for each suicidal person, and that's probably a low estimate for the number of people impacted. So I think I'm going to wrap it up there. I hope that I got kind of all of the the key points across during that storytelling of, you know, basically look after yourself, forgive yourself, do what you can, set boundaries, recognize that you cannot solve everything. Yeah, I'll consider those the highlights. And I forgot to turn off my cell phone for once, and that's my cover mate Holly, if you can hear it in the background. This is what we like to call podcast shame. Shame, shame, shame on the podcaster for not turning it off. But thankfully, this was the end of this segment. Hopefully, I got it out in a coherent enough fashion and got across what needed to get across. But do feel free to email me or post on... So email me at penniesinthewell@gmail.com. Post on the website, penniesinthewell.com. I'm also on Facebook as Saturn Dark Hope, and you can join the group. You can't like it because it's not that kind of fan page, but you can join the group for Pennies in the Well, where you, if you want to discuss things there, that's perfectly wonderful. And there's also Twitter. I'm under Bismal_Witch. I know it's a weird spot to put all of the contact info, but the fact is that I want you to have that kind of contact info right after the really heavy, deep segment. So let me know if you have comments or questions, if you feel there's something that I didn't cover well or that I missed, or if there is things that you disagree with or you have concerns of. I really hope that I haven't distressed anyone in any particular side of this. So let's take a break, and we'll come back with our final couple of segments for the show. Episode 19 of Pennies in the Well is brought to you by the Tarot card, the Knight of Cups, and the Runestone of... Oh, two of them today. We have Fehu and Kenar.
Hi, this is Ricky Lacoste, the host of Cacophonos Internet Radio, an esoteric and metaphysically flavored podcast.
With Vikings?
Occasionally with Vikings.
All of the time with Vikings. What am I, chopped liverwurst?
And you are listening to Pennies in the Well with the lovely Saturn Darkhold.
Uranus. Uranus?
Stop it.
You have to listen to it. If you don't, I'm going to come over there and ram it up
your... Wolfgang!
Sorry, Ricky.
And welcome back to episode 19 of Pennies in the Well. We have a few last things, including one more segment to get through before the end of the show. And if you guys only knew the number of times that I've restarted this little segment, and almost every restart has ended with fuck-a-duck. Why fuck a duck? I don't know, but it seems to be my favorite phrase. Anyhow, we do have a couple things to get through. And first off, I have a little message, a call out, if you will, to the podkin out there. I love playing different promos for different people, and not necessarily people I listen to on a regular basis, because I know there are fabulous podcasts out there that I haven't yet downloaded because, you know, finite amount of time, and well... There you go. What are you going to do? What am I going to do? I'm going to ask you to send me your promos. So if you haven't heard me play your promo, send it on off to me. Heck, if you have heard it and want to send it to me again just to be sure, feel free. If you haven't even noticed if I played your promo, feel free to send it to me. I would like to get as many different promos as possible so that each episode, each regular episode, because I don't usually play them in the other ones, I can share something different with the listeners of different things that they could find interesting. Okay, podkin announcement over. Next, let's get into the final segment of the night. And yes, I know I have a contest on the go, and I will be doing the draw at the very end because, you know, being cruel that way just seems to suit me today. I know it's not very seasonal, Yuletide giving and all that, But it still kind of seemed like fun because it's a wonderful thing. So first, let's get into the next segment, which is, can you guess? That's right. What the fuck? And welcome to the inaugural What the Fuck segment of Pennies in the Well. And the reason that we now have a What the Fuck segment is because that's kind of what happened in my world. And through strange what the fuck circumstances, it also leads to the next contest that we're going to have. So what it is I have two books that I'm going to review, and I'll explain where they both come from. And and one of those books, I have two copies, and I will be sharing one of them with you. The first book, however, is not the contest one. Let me just grab here from under the cat, because how the heck the cat gets on top of the book just as I'm grabbing for it? I don't know. Anyhow. I was at the Surrey International Writers Conference, as I've mentioned, and at the conference there was a set of vendors of various types, usually book-related, and included in that group of vendors were two women who had published their own book, and they were wearing rather kind of SCA wench garb clothing, if you know what I mean. Like off-the-shoulder bustier, like off-the-shoulder peasant top, bustier around the middle, long flowing skirts kind of deal, probably a corset in there somewhere. And lovely ladies, and oh, the most glorious crystals on their table. Have I mentioned that I'm a stoner? I adore stones, can't get enough of stones, and oh my god, their stones were gorgeous! Yeah. So they kept trying to catch my attention as I was running around like a mad woman on the first day and a half. And I kept going, no, I will be back. I will be back. And this particular lady was, she had a feeling about me and I had a feeling about her. I mean, it was pretty obvious anyways, but I asked and they are definitely pagan. And I picked up their book. So it's a self-published book and I'm now going to critique it. It's called The Wise Woman's Cookery, subtitled Food, Sex, Magic, and Merriment. I'm trying to see what their names were, but it's not actually there. Once again, this was published by by these lovely ladies. So that there are certain things that I find shows that it was self-published. I will say that it is a glossy, high-quality page book where the pictures are absolutely stunning. Anyhow, to give you an idea of what it's about, and you can check it out at www.wisewomanscookery.com, and it says it's a guide to first aphrodisiac cooking. These quick and easy food recipes will transport you and your lover from the dinner table to your most sensual imaginings. A guide to sensual simples. Make natural elixirs, lotions, and potions from herbs and spices in your own kitchen. And a guide to folklore erotica. Secrets of seduction are revealed through the intoxicating tales of the most infamous women in history. So there is a bit of it kind of being a little bit all over the place. I will say that. But the places that it takes you are pretty damn cool. So opening the page randomly, we have a very lovely semi-naked woman on one page. And on the left is Blackberry Booby Trap, a body syrup. So I'm just going to read this for you because I think a little hint of what it's like. A tease tincture aphrodisiac, transcendent sweet indulgence, inviting the tongue, licking, lingering, the pursed lips pulling, caressing, tender love bites on the hardened nipples, waves of butterfly pleasure fluttering through your inner sex, awakening your natural lubricant, desirous, your clitoris pulsating with the foretaste of orgasm, hot, wet sex play. So they talk a whole variety of things, from practical kind of love-making aspects to spell work to cooking of various natures. Some of the recipes actually sound pretty good. I'm flipping randomly and getting like sacred ink, and it looks like they've been using it for body painting. Mediterranean stew, sex and the goddess queen. There's a lot about cinnamon actually, which was kind of cool. And different uses of cinnamon and different uses of herbs. Drunken raisin rice pudding. Gotta say, that actually sounds pretty good. So I actually find the book itself quite intriguing. I haven't had a chance to read through it truly and fully yet, but I plan to spend a little time looking through it. So there's a lot of interesting things in there. They certainly take in the sexuality thing to quite the extreme in certain places. Clove, ginger, pleasuring essence. Oh, yeah. So there's a lot of that going on in the book. It really is a sensual book, and it shows in how it's put together, in the pictures, in the quality of the paper. It wants to lure you in with visual and touch and with the words themselves. A little disjointed in how it comes across for me. I tend to be very organized in my head, and I like to see organization in other things. And I find this a little bit here, there, and everywhere. But if you want to take a rambling walk through a very sensual type of experience, it would be a good book. So I will put up the link online. I don't know that, you know, it's hard to say that I would say, go out and buy that first. There are other books I would recommend for other things first. But for a sensuality magic book, that was actually pretty interesting. Most of them focus in different ways. Not that I've bought a lot of them, but I have bought a couple. And this one wasn't about any psychological work that I noticed. It was really kind of the down and dirty of getting physically connected and how to pleasure yourself, how to pleasure your mate. Yeah, so good times. The second book came to me via a publisher. Now, amusingly, we had a little shipping incident. Yeah, I feel bad about that. And I ended up actually with two copies of it through said accident. So thus, I have one to give away. This one is The Fairy's Guide to Green Magic from the Garden, which is one heck of a long title in my opinion, by Jamie Wood and Lisa Steinke, S-T-E-I-N-K-E. And it is kind of what you would guess. Essentially, it has some intro at the beginning about, so Fairy's Guide to Green Magic, what is fairy, green gardening, complementary medicine, fairy's message. Those are its intros. And then it's got a herb index. And that's where I have to admit I focus most of my attention. Now, they know what they're talking about, unquestionably. They've got the basics of what each herb that they've listed, what it does on a medicinal level, and then they get into the magical level. And in each section, so for each herb, there could be a meditation, there could be a recipe for how to cook with it. And there's usually about, I guess you could say, 4 pages devoted to each one. The first page is a pretty picture, so typically a fairy in it. And somewhere in the picture, there will be a representation of the herb, the plant, the tree that is being discussed. Now, one of the gripes I have with this particular book is just that if you know what the plant looks like, you can totally pick it out of the picture. But if you don't know what it looks like, you would not be able to go from the picture and out into the field and be able to recognize it. So this is not a field guide to your herbs. If that's what you're looking for, if you're looking for a really kind of medicinal book, then, or one that's kind of got every herb you can imagine, there's a bunch of herb books that are really good for that. Beryl's herbalism book, Cunningham's got the Master Book of Herbalism out. There's several others of a more medicinal kind of practical nature that are also out there, less magical. This one, again, it's got a limited number. It's got about probably about 36, 40 different herbs that are listed, which is not very many. So it covers the standards, the standard magical ones. But not a huge and wide variety. But it is pretty. If you wanted to give someone who is kind of, you know, interested but wants to be entertained over their herbs, not necessarily looking to get down and dirty and learn everything that there is to know about it, this might be a good book for them, where they might find it entertaining and pretty, as I said. Because it is. It's a very pretty book. And that is about all I'm going to say about that, I think. It's nice, it's got some good information in it. But it's more like a coffee table book for me, that it's one that you want to look for through when you want, you know, a little reference maybe on an herb, a little kind of hint on something, and a looks at pretty pictures. And if you're into fairies, you will love this book, because the fairies are in each of the plant pictures, and they're very lovely. So those are my book reviews. Once again, not my standard typical kind of thing. Go frickin' figure. So that's my what the fuck segment for this week, and or this show. Okay, for the contest. Now, given that it's December 6th now, and December's a crazy month, I'm going to put this one won't close until the end of January. I don't recommend that you sit on your ass and not get your entry in right away, because time runs out faster than we think and we forget to do things. So you have till January 31st to get your entry into me, and I'm going to add a new condition that when you email me, so email penniesinthewell@gmail.com, you need to put contest entry as the subject line, because when it goes to finding all those contest entries, I tend to start pulling my hair out, because I don't tend to be the most organized at home. I swear, I use up all my organization at work, none left at home. So the question that is you get to answer this time, kind of reminiscent of the contest a couple of contests ago, I want, and it can be short or long as you see fit, but answer this question. What aspect or part of nature makes you feel the most magical? So you can't just say nature makes you feel magical. That's a cop-out. And no, you can say, you know, that the beach at the ocean makes you feel magical. I would love to know why. I'm not going to insist on it, but I would love to know why, or what is it about it that makes it magical for you. So to repeat, what aspect or part of nature makes you feel the most magical? So what brings out that wonderful feeling inside of you? Where are you in nature when that happens? What is it in that spot in nature that causes it to happen? That's what I'm looking for. So it can be as long or short, complicated or simple as you like it to be, but your answer cannot be that you just all of nature. Mm-mm. Definitely a no-go on that one. And don't forget to put contest entry into your subject line. All right, so that ends the What the Fuck segment for this show. And we're going to just do a final draw, and then we're going to head out of the show. So this is the draw from Zombie Palooza, which I hope you guys enjoyed. And for those who sent in their entry, you guys were all right. And Forest Grove Botanica was the real ad. And so let's see who the lucky winner is. What exactly are they getting? I believe it was two or three of her items. I think there was some incense in there. Damn, we selected it together. I'm afraid I can't even tell you. So it's a surprise package as to what it's going to be. Anyway, let me get the name out. Let's see who the winner is. Who's the winner? Who's the lucky winner? And the winner is Araya. So that's Araya the Sphinx from Media Astra Octera. Congratulations, Araya. You're going to have to send me an address, and then I will get Sarah from Forest Grove Botanica to mail you out your special package. I hope you enjoy. And on that note, that very happy note, this is the end of episode 19 of Pennies in the Well. I hope that you have enjoyed my rather ramblingness tonight, because, well, two nights actually. One of those, the Christmas season's upon me and getting things out meant just go for it. So I have. The closing things. I've already told you where the heck to find me. But really quick, penniesinthewell.com. You can email me, penniesinthewell@gmail.com. I'm abysmal_witch on Twitter. I'm Saturn Dark Hope on Facebook. You can read my blog at abysmalwitch.wordpress.com. Find me on Podcast Alley. You know, you can find me in all the usual haunts. I do want to say that, wow, it's been really too long since I put out the last podcast. I've missed you guys. Not that I was pod fading in the slightest, and I don't think you would have thought that, but I did miss you, and it's good to be back. So I'm going to leave you with the final song, Follow You, Follow Me from Genesis. Again, I thought it was a nice message given the topic of this particular podcast. And as always, deep and wild blessings to you.
Just one single tear.